Hello, everyone. Welcome to Pep Talk, Pepperdine University's podcast dedicated to sparking conversations of personal and global significance, featuring world-renowned professors, faculty, and students from across the university. In this Pep Talk series, we will be discussing relationships. Whether you are single or married, a parent or a grandparent, a professional or an executive, relationships are an essential part of our lives. Join us as we explore how to build relationships and navigate their challenges in today's world. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Pep Talk. My name's Alexa. This is Kobe.
Hey, everybody. Good to be back.
So good to be back. In this episode, Kobe and I are going to discuss why friendship matters, challenges to modern friendships, how to build and sustain friendships, and how friendship and faith may intersect. But today we have a special guest, Kobe. I'm going to give it to you to introduce our special guest.
Yeah, so we have a very special guest with us today who is the Fletcher Jones Chair of Great Books at Pepperdine University, author of multiple books, including The Scandal of Holiness and the most recent, Why Do the Heathen Rage, which is the publication of Flannery O'Connor's unpublished final novel. Go read it. But more importantly, to me, someone who has been a great blessing in my life as a professor and mentor way back in my college days, but now who I have the blessing of having as a close friend. And so please welcome Jessica Houghton-Wilson. Jessica, it's great to have you.
Kobe, I always laugh when 20-year-olds tell me, like, way back in college, and I'm sitting over here 4 decades old and thinking, well, that's way, way back for me.
Back in the good old days.
Pre-COVID. Yeah.
So, Jessica, just to start off, so this has been a podcast about relationships. We've gone through kind of several different types of relationships, dating, marriage, workplace relationships. We're talking about friendships today. I think it would be interesting to ask you, as someone who's been in the classroom for a few years now, how have you seen kind of friendships develop? How do you think they maybe have changed amongst your friends, amongst students? Do the dynamics look similar as they did when Alexa and I were students? Do they look different now? How have you seen friendship develop?
Well, I am coming from two different perspectives. So 20-something years ago when I was in the college classroom is a little different if you want me to now treat my college students like they're in a fishbowl and I'm looking at them and wondering, like, how do you guys make friendships?
Yeah.
Because the way that I make friendships also looks different than I did 20 years ago, but I'm in a different stage in life, right? So
totally.
All of these different ways of having relationships, I think, change not just with age, but also location. We were talking earlier, Alex, about seasons, different seasons of life. Having those other relationships, such as work relationships, as well as marriage, is different than when you're in college because it's all your college relationships, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the subtle pulls of, well, my children need me. My spouse needs a different kind of friendship. My parents, who I don't live with and do not sustain me economically, also need a different kind of relationship. You know, whereas I feel like there's this sameness that happens when you're in your 20s where everybody is kind of in the same sphere.
Yeah.
No one has a full-time job necessarily. Some people work, but for the most part, it's this, like, we're all doing the same thing. We're all in this together. You don't have that for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Everybody's in different places in different seasons. And so your ways of interacting with them change.
Totally. It's almost like those, all of those other types of relationships you named are, at least elements of those are kind of rolled into one, into whoever your friends are in the college stage.
Yeah.
And I think, too, this is, we didn't even plan to talk about this, but I think an interesting transition, too, that both of us have experienced is I think there's a significant change when you go from that college environment into the young adult world, where all of a sudden being friends instead of being like, we live together and we walk to class together every day, instead becomes, oh, I guess I'll see you after work for a coffee.
Yeah.
Two Thursdays from now. It's like trying to schedule a podcast recording.
Yeah, there's so many great people that I'm friends with from college still, but just comparing our schedules, it's like planning 2 months ahead, 3 months ahead, and just, I mean, luckily now people are getting married, and I feel like in my life I get to see groups of people that I haven't seen in so long.
Yeah.
Marriages are great for that, but it's tough to plan and really put friendships at the center, you know, different things.
Well, and I think the word friend changes post-college because if you think about it, in elementary school, junior high school, there's this consistent thread that you were friends with people your age.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. If you ask a 7-year-old who their friends are, they're going to name the people around them. They might name their siblings, which are a little different ages.
Right.
But it's not drastically different.
Right.
You graduate and suddenly you might have friends that are 60 that you're friends with.
Yeah.
Right. You hang out and watch Dodgers games.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there might be people in your life like Kobe, you and I are friends. Right. Uh-huh. That are 20 years apart. But they're still your friends. And so, just the meaning of friends, you have to start wrestling with, like, what exactly is a friend? Is it just people you hang out with? Is it people, like you said, work with? I mean, what makes it a friend where you could actually define it as that?
Totally. Well, and not to put you on the spot, but I mean, I feel like you've kind of brought us to this point. I would love to know, if we're here talking about friendship and we don't even know what the thing
is, right?
What are we doing? So at least maybe a working definition, when we're talking about this thing called friendship, how would you define that?
Yeah, I think that's a really important question. A friend of mine, I use that term, I hope correctly, but a friend of mine was making fun of me because he and I were having this conversation in which he was mentioning authors he was reading. And I was like, oh, that's a friend. And he's like, you can't have that many friends. Like, it's not allowed, right? So English is one of those languages where we take a word and we just have this one word that sustains, but it doesn't quite grasp it. So, like, for example, in Russian, you have two different words and they're friend. They're both friend. But one of them means, like, the person you're going to die for and lay down your life for, right? And the other one is, like, I meet them for coffee.
Yeah.
Right? You know? And so...
Coffee, I'm going to differentiate. Just so you know.
Exactly. You have to think about, like, how you're using that word and what it really means. Of course, I teach great books, and so immediately I'm thinking of Aristotle. Aristotle defines it in three different words. For him, it's those that you use. So you think networking. When we talk about friendship, sometimes we're talking about networks. We are all kind of in the same field, the same discipline, the same area, and we need each other. And it doesn't detract from the fact that we're friends. But if so-and-so suddenly, you know, we were authors together and now he became a farmer, we wouldn't be in the same network, right? If he needed me, maybe I would go, but we wouldn't see each other at conferences, those kinds of things. The other one is pleasure. So it's those friends that I think most people make in college. Are you fun? Right?
And that's the only criteria.
You're like, are you a fun person? Right? And the funnest people have the most friends.
It's like,
and
that's can, just
like Kobe. Kobe has lots of
friends. Stop.
How many group chats you start these days?
The thing is, having a lot of group chats does not give you a lot of friends. It's whether people respond in the group chats.
Alexa. Oh, that's calling me out.
But I think... yeah, in college, I feel like it's literally only that. You have people who are just way different kinds of cats who at the end of the day, in some ways, I think sitcoms are a really accurate portrayal of this, because it's like you'll have the sort of quote unquote sort of normal people, and then you'll have the sort of like fringe characters, but they're fun. And so they all get along and they make the episode way more interesting.
Uh-huh.
But the shared thing there, all that being said, is that these are just fun people who you like being around.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think college is full of that. I think the work environment is full of that, those two kinds of friends. It's the third kind that when I introduce it to students, and when I was introduced to it at 18 reading Nicomachean Ethics, was, whoa, that's a different definition. And what he says is a friend is someone where it's two souls dwelling, or one soul dwelling in two bodies. It's this idea that the two of you are these virtuous souls that are on a journey together, right? And that's a much deeper, when you start examining the people in your life, like how many of those do you have, right? You almost want a different word than friend when it comes to those people in your life.
You almost think that would, I always thought before I heard of that concept, like that would just be reserved for like romanticism, like romantic partners, but not really for a friend. But I think it's so much more beautiful that it is through a friendship that you can have a friendship of virtue.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, can I jump on Lewis again? Or is that too? Like, I can't help it too.
Great.
But for Aristotle, he's defining friendship in terms of these souls, because he's thinking in terms of what do they have in common that's deeper and more lasting and eternal. So even though he's a pagan, he is imagining those things that are really deep is what ties you together. C.S. Lewis then takes that and says, when it comes to a man and a woman, having that level of friendship may be a starting place. It becomes love when you look into each other's eyes rather than each other's eyes standing next to each other looking at something together. So there's like this very subtle shift that Lewis makes in which he says, you move from a friendship in which we are bonded by these eternal things to looking into each other's eyes, right? We're the two souls or one soul dwelling in two bodies now facing one another rather than facing out together.
I think this is a beautiful, it's a beautiful word picture from Lewis. I love this passage. I'm gonna back you up a little bit here, right? He's describing these things as postures.
Yes.
Right? You're saying, and he says that love is this moving toward actually looking into each other's eyes. But friendship, right, would be what? He says shoulder to shoulder?
Shoulder to shoulder, right. So you're both looking at the eternal things or the permanent things together.
Yeah.
Right? And he says there's this moment where you know somebody's a friend because you're talking about something and you realize you both love it the same amount, right? And it has to be something that you love that's really good. This is
you
different
too?
Than pleasure.
I thought I was the only one.
That's right. That's the quote, right? This is
mimetic
from
Four Loves.
Sorry. Yeah.
Rene Girard nerd getting going over here.
Well, and it's exactly right. Like you move from a place of, okay, we like the same video game. That's just pleasure, right? Or we like the same vocation, the same job. That's just usefulness and network. This is, wait, we both love talking about justice. Wait, we both love talking about Aristotle and C.S. Lewis. Like, wait, we both love talking about these big questions about religion and identity and politics and all these things that are really deep and enduring. That's different than those other two kinds of conversations where you're both looking at the same thing.
Yeah.
But it changes and it's temporary.
Well, and I think when you experience that, we've all experienced this, where when you're in one of those conversations, it's almost like you're like drawn up into something beyond what you even realize is going. I had a phone conversation with one of my best friends from home earlier today where it was like 30 minutes went by where we started talking about Brothers Karamazov and started getting into the meaning of life, essentially, and all of the big questions. And it was like everything else almost kind of melts away in such a way that you're like looking at this third thing, that divine justice, the meaning of, and you're drawn up into it together. And I think drawn up into it together in a way that you couldn't be even if you were just looking at it yourself. If you're just reading the book or just thinking about the thing, there's something about the conversation and friendship that's able to draw it out of you in a way that it couldn't before. And sorry, I'm really getting going here. But Lewis and Lewis talks about this too, right? Where he says, this is the case even among the angels, right? They are, it's no coincidence that in when the throne room of God is described, that it's not to God, but to each other that they're exclaiming, holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty. Because even with all their eyes, they can't comprehend it fully alone.
Yeah. Well, and even pagans. So, I mean, I never want to like leave the pagans off the table, so to speak, because they get us going that direction. So even someone like Aristotle, who he's not imagining worshiping together for eternity, but he is imagining this idea of virtue. Like it's a human excellence. And he requires friendship for human excellence because he thinks you cannot be good alone. You can't do this thing by yourself, right? And so that gets us started. If you can't do this alone, what else can you not do alone? Well, worship, right? These things cannot be done only by yourself, but they are enhanced when you're doing them with other people.
Definitely.
Okay, so transitioning to the modern world, you know, we talk about the loneliness epidemic that so many people, men and women, are going through right now. So maybe, Jessica, could you walk us through social media and why our social media friends do not feel the same as our virtuous friends?
Yeah, I think it goes back to Aristotle's classification, but I think we
can use
it.
Aristotle just forgot one category, Facebook friends.
I think that's exactly, I was going to take his categories and say they're the first two kinds. And it's impossible on social media to have more than a usefulness for those people or a pleasure from those people. You cannot pursue virtue. I'm going to say that, and people might like write you guys in or like start getting upset, and maybe it's worth a conversation. I can always be wrong. But from what I can see, you cannot be a virtuous friend via social media.
There's a ceiling that you can't go beyond.
Because it's an embodied thing.
Yeah.
And because you're capping your words, you're cutting your images, you're showing only certain parts of things. Virtue is about mastering cowardice or pursuing justice. It's these things that are messy to start with and become goods together. So if you're editing out all the mess before you get on social media and you're not showing that, or if you're one of those people that loves showing the victim and showing the shame, that's also not a virtuous pursuit. So either direction kind of forces you into persona And persona is what blocks us from deep level friendships.
Yeah.
You need the vulnerability in order to have the real togetherness in which you pursue virtue and become virtuous.
So
right?
good.
Wow. What do you think the antidote is for society today?
Like, yeah.
Loneliest society ever, statistically.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do we do?
Like, we want to seek virtuous friendships, but how do we do that? How do we find that?
I mean, I hate to just say great books because that's like, of course, one of. So, what am I doing? I mean, really, what I am doing is requiring deeper levels of commitment from people that is real connections about real things. For me, that ends up being books, right?
Right.
So, when I sit at a table with my kids with whom those are the friendships I want for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I look at my 2-year-old, my 7-year-old, you know, I have four kids. I want when they're 30-something to be my friends. How do I do that? We read books together. We read the Bible at dinner. We have real conversations at dinner. So the kinds of relationships I'm pursuing, I'm intentionally chasing friendship with my children, right? I'm intentional about my friendships with other people. When I'm with them, I prioritize that over picking up my phone, or I know the place of the technology. The place is like, hey, can we meet at so-and-so place together? But then when we get there, let's not make our friendship mediated by the device in our hands. That device then takes a back seat. I think the problem in our culture is that we don't know how to do without the device. The device is on the front end. It's the constant mediation between us and the other people. And that's what prevents a lot of the real friendships from happening.
Right. And you can see the irony in that, right? We're we're the most connected society ever, but also the most lonely society.
Yeah.
Yes.
Heartbreaking.
Because it can't replace, only having those first two kinds of friendships doesn't replace having the third.
Yeah.
Do you think you can transition those two friendships into the third? Like if through reading books, through like Bible study, through seeking the good?
I do. Okay. I think it's, but I also think it's reliant on human beings acknowledging who they truly are.
Right.
And that sounds like a weird thing to say out loud. But what I mean is if we're all chasing the virtuous life, then we can pursue that together. The problem is some of your usefulness friendships are with not virtuous people. Mm. And Aristotle would say that would be a direct hurdle to ever becoming more than useful because anything's going to either become like pretense or, you know, the minute you're not useful to them, the friendship ends. So if you want to go from usefulness to them pursuing virtue together, you just need to do it with someone who's actually virtuous. Like they want the same thing that you want. They have to have those same level of desires. Or fun. I mean, this is a constant conversation in marriages. If marriage begins with we had fun together, we were dating and we were constantly having fun together, my best friend who I always have fun with, what happens when that person gets in a car accident and that person loses some of the faculties that made them so much fun? Are you no longer able to have that sustained friendship? What does the marriage then look like, right? And so we have to think about making sure that the priority is on that virtuous pursuit. And that's really hard. And you have to admit that it's hard.
Yeah, definitely. Hard but worthwhile as well.
I mean, the best things are, right?
Yeah, always.
Wow. Maybe my question is, how does Jesus model deep friendship with his disciples? That's something I was reading
about.
That's
a great question.
You know,
It's not, I don't think it's a good transition. But if you start with the pagans, right, they're giving us as far as they can go. And one of the things that Socrates says is like, what would happen if a perfectly just man existed, right? So the pagans are like looking for the just man. And then, of course, Socrates, like his followers say, well, we would kill him, of course, right? I mean, that's the end of the perfectly just man. Yep. And so you get this kind of foreshadowing of who Jesus is. So when you think about Aristotle's friendship, he's pointing you to Jesus. He just doesn't know it. That's the perfectly virtuous man with whom you can pursue virtue.
I just got goosebumps. That's
right?
Awesome.
I mean, that's hopefully the goal in the end. So what does it look like in the scriptures? I think that's one of the best things, like best examples of friendship that we see is he didn't try to be friends with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. He would have never used that word that loosely, right? What does it say in the Proverbs? A friend is someone who lays down their life. So Jesus is that person who lays down his life.
And I think it's okay and it's a good thing even. I've noticed it's so easy to think that we have to have the same level of relationship with every person. But I think it's and people a lot of times have this noble desire to give of themselves to everyone possible, right? But Jesus, he loves everyone that he encounters, right? But there's a different level of friendship with the 12. They are his actual friends. And even from there, there's a different level of friendship with Peter, James, and John.
And Mary and Martha and Lazarus.
And there's a different level of relationship, yes, with Mary, Martha, Lazarus. And that's okay, right? These are relationships that for whatever reason, I don't even know how to get into the theological implications of this, but for whatever reason, Christ as a man in human history, part of his calling was to be a friend to these men and women in a different way than he was to everyone else. And yet he's a friend to all of us.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a misunderstanding of hierarchy. We assume that when you go down to three people, then suddenly those three people are more important than the other 12 people or 15 or 72. I don't think Jesus thinks in terms of hierarchies. And again, I could be wrong. But instead, what he's doing, right, these are particular callings.
Yeah.
So these are three men who had particular callings. And what does one of them get called to? James gets beheaded, right? Yeah. Peter gets sacrificed and executed. John is the one who lives the longest. So there's no hierarchy in his calls that he makes on
them.
It's
like when they when they ask him, right, they have a different understanding. Hey, can we be on your right and your left when we come into your kingdom? And he's like, can you drink the cup that I drink of, right? You have no idea what you're actually asking for.
Yes.
You have a totally different understanding.
I love that passage, and I just got excited about that passage because he says that's how the world thinks, and he responds in Mark, not so with you. When you think about friendship, we have to continually say we're not going to do friendship the way the world does. Not so with you is the call Jesus makes on us.
Yeah.
And so friendship can't be hierarchical. It can't be only if you're fun or only if you're useful to me. It has to be like, do you want to love what I love, right? Because I'm loving God.
Mm.
Walk with me towards that. If you detract me from that, then you're not my friend, right? Get behind me, Satan, right? I mean, instead, we have to think of friendship as like, who is helping us move towards Jesus?
Yeah.
And how can we help them move towards Jesus?
Right. It's not the same way where for Christians as it is for non-believers, where it's something that you have that qualifies you because you're cool enough or you know, we just both like the same sports team. And this is where the church is this really beautiful thing, where what is the third thing that we're all looking at that we're shoulder to shoulder looking at? We're all looking at Christ.
Yes.
And we're coming from very different perspectives with very different personalities from very different generations. And this is where, an 80-year-old and a 20-year-old can be true and should be true friends because they are both pursuing virtue and pursuing Christ together.
Yeah. It's not if the 80-year-old is fun.
Yeah.
It's not if the 4-year-old is useful to you.
Yeah.
Right.
Those no longer are defining features of friends.
Exactly. And I think, too, this brings me, I know we're running out of time, but intergenerational friendship makes me think of the whole sort of concept of great books, of what you do is sort of based on this idea that we can, as one book puts it, break bread with the dead.
Yes.
That there's a sense in which we can actually be friends through time with these people who are helping us pursue virtue. I hope that this conversation has already been kind of an example of this principle, but I would love to just give you the floor for just a little bit to talk through. I think people who aren't familiar with the Pepperdine Great Books program or with the world of great books or who didn't grow up with the kind of education that some schools offer in great books probably have a perspective that these are just dusty, dead people who are talking about things that don't apply to us in the modern world. What's the pitch for what something like the Pepperdine Great Books program does for me as a modern person who's thinking about going to college and thinking about what I should study and wants to get something actually valuable out of it for my life in the present?
Yeah. In the scriptures, Jesus talks about God is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he says, but God is not the God of the dead. He's the God of the living.
Mm.
And what he implies there is that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are alive.
Mm.
So I think the misunderstanding about the great books, that they're dusty dead guys, is that they're actually alive. And they're probably more alive than most of us, right? and that's a difficult paradigm shift for a lot of people. But if we take Aristotle's conception of use, entertainment, and virtue as the three defining characteristics of the three different kinds of friends you can have, well, are you reading books because they're useful to you? Are you reading books because they entertain you? Or are you reading books because they're helping you become more virtuous?
Hmm.
So those authors then become someone you become friends with because they too were on that journey and they are alive and you are both looking at the same thing, pursuing the same good ends together.
This is this is kind of a meta example, but this is Dante, right? In the Divine Comedy. Very first scene, he's lost in the dark woods. I love the Divine Comedy in that there's so many self-help books out there that are like, here's how you don't get into a mess, mm-hmm. right? Here's how you always stay on the straight and narrow and never get into any problems or financial issues or sins or what. Dante says, actually, all of us are going to find ourselves in messes at some point. We're going to start the book in the dark wood.
Yeah.
I don't know where the heck I am. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to get out, right? And who does he see? Virgil,
yeah.
who's mm-hmm. this supposedly dead guy who he says, by great and long study, I recognized you instantly.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's actually become friends with him
through
the books.
And then he can recognize him. Yeah. And even when they're climbing purgatory and Statius joins them, it's an example of what Virgil just taught him, which love, when it's divided among more, doesn't become less, it becomes more, right? And Lewis quotes that in The Four Loves, where he says, like, just like in Dante, love can be increased by having more friends, even though it looks like it would decrease that you have to pay attention to more people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right? But that's not the reality. So when it comes to great books, I can love Socrates, but then if I love the Brothers Karamazov, my love has just increased, not become divided or less because I've read another book, right? And so when I do the great books with my students, I'm trying to give them that same kind of friendship to overcome the loneliness, the anxiety. I don't think our culture has gotten better by reading less.
Yeah.
I can't say that reading is the cure-all because I don't think it is, but it's definitely one of those resources for discipleship that we left by the wayside. And I think we've become lonelier and more anxious because of that.
It's true.
Wow. Well, this was such a great discussion. We hope to welcome you again on the podcast, Jessica. Kobe, thank you for co-hosting with me today.
Absolutely. Such a joy.
Such a joy. Awesome. We'll see us next time on Pep Talk. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you, guys.